The markets never sleep, but sometimes they do pause for eggnog. Now we're going to look back and unwrap the year that was.
That's right. 2025 gave us lots of surprises, lots of changes, lots of the volatility. And so today, we're going to take a bit of a step back from the daily news cycle and reflect. Talk about the things that we got right, the things we got wrong, what was on our naughty list, on our nice list, and give you some predictions for 2026.
Welcome to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein.
And I'm Luke Guerrero.
And this is our 2025 holiday special. The year markets overall, and three big lessons. But we're going to start with number one, the most surprising market move of the year. What was yours?
Mine was probably the wholesale collapse in volatility risk premiums, right? The VIX stayed unusually low. Considering what happened earlier in the year, right? You had this spike after Liberation Day, tariff movement, but you've essentially had a big reshuffling of the global economy, and volatility has just been non-existent for most of the year. So that was kind of the big surprise that I had coming into the year, especially because typically, you know, post-election, new presidency, it's always a time of change. Market participants have pretty much just ignored that.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you?
It was foreign stock outperformance. It's been languishing for so long. You guys, like, should I rotate in foreign markets? Well, it never really happened. It was, you know, the thing that everybody was just waiting for. But what it tells you is flows matter, right?
Yeah.
After even going into the year and after Liberation Day, money is still leaving the U.S. marginally. And that is pushing money into the foreign markets where nobody really paid attention to. And now there's a strong trend and there's still a lot of great value out there. So I thought that was my biggest surprise when talking about what I expected for the year going into 2025. It was that, you know, you probably still have an outperformance out of the U.S., but that didn't happen this year.
Well, one thing that I think I got right was actually the opposite. I kind of expected some sort of international outperformance for multiple reasons, right? You had a shifting of economic regime. You had a presidency and an administration coming in that said they wanted to get very insular, right? They wanted to reshore supply chains, do all these things, such that investor capital was probably going to flow elsewhere. I didn't think it would happen to the extent that it did. One thing that I think I got wrong was I kind of underestimated how long this market leadership would hold. Right. It seemed to me coming into this year, maybe rates coming down, all sorts of catalysts for a broadening of market activity. But still, for most of the year, it's the same theme driving the same areas of the market higher. Now, you're starting to see a bit of a rotation out of that, right? Is it going to hold? Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I expected earlier in the year.
Yep. My guy White was bold.
Gold. Shiny.
I've been bullish gold for a number of years and didn't expect it to perform this well this year.
No.
But yeah, definitely got that one right. What I got wrong was that tariffs would, I thought they would have a larger impact sooner. And companies have been able, it's been twofold. Companies front-loaded tariffs in a big way, so they have a lot of inventory.
Yeah.
And their supply chains have been more flexible than I think everybody had expected. And also, the other side of it is Trump talked about it. He didn't think that he would constantly be bringing down these tariffs. Even if they're still much higher than they were before, I think the effective rate is gone from about 2% to like 10%.
Yeah.
Whereas,
it's still meaningful.
It's still meaningful.
So you're starting to see Jerome Powell talked about it in this press conference that, you know, you're starting to see
But 7 months post-Liberation Day plus? And, you know, the economy is certainly slowing. It's having an impact, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's not having the drastic impact that I expect.
Yeah, it's not having a wholesale breakdown. It's more of recreating the pandemic era K-shape where wealthier people are doing very well, poorer people are not doing well.
Yeah. Now, last one is chart or data point that actually matters. So what from, you know, there's a lot of headlines out there. It's very easy, social media, as well as obviously traditional media. Headlines, it's all about clickbait, all about making something that's very big or very small seem big. What is actually big, but seems false to advertise?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I got wrong. which was about market breadth, right? When you look at the S&P 493 versus the Mag 7 and how they performed not just this year, but in previous years as well, it kind of tells you about multiple layers of risk, which is concentration risk, because most people are just heavily concentrated in the S&P 500 or in other U.S. market tracking indices, which are heavily oriented towards tech more than they ever have been, oriented towards AI. And that just gives you the warning of, okay, if your portfolio is highly concentrated, you have asymmetric exposure to a huge market drawdown. On the flip side, it also tells you that there's a lot of opportunities out there for growth from areas of the market that have been underserved over the past 2 years.
My number one statistic that nobody talks about enough is bank lending. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about what's going on with the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Fed lowering rates? Are they doing QE? Or should I be doing QE again? Like, all that stuff matters on the margins. But banks create money.
Yeah.
Commercial banks and them lending is the number one factor in creating dollars and liquidity in the system that allows the economy to stay afloat, to not have a major default cycle in credit that drives drastic unemployment. Or major bankruptcies and declines in asset prices, et cetera. So as long as banks are still lending, I would also say everything else doesn't matter, but most things don't matter that much because it's just creating more liquidity. And you continue to see that through this year. Bank lending growth has continued to accelerate modestly. They were at about 4.5-5% year-over-year growth, which is not amazing, but it's solid. And
yep,
that's why I think everything is kind of all together. For the most part, naughty or nice. Now, what are the average investor behaviors and themes of this year that were naughty? And Max, what did you have?
One thing that was really naughty is kind of a resurgence of chasing meme stocks. You know, in 2020, was it 2020 or 2021? I think it was end of 2020 when GameStop blew up. You had a bunch of investors flowing into these names that had very little fundamental value, but had some sort of rage bait towards hedge funds and
that goes with the broader theme of our following, which I think is terrible.
Gambling.
Everything is gambling.
Everything is
speculation. Cashly and all that is just
Cashly says they're not gambling. There's a court case that said they're not gambling. They're market makers.
Sure.
The reality for all of you out there is that, you know, people who oftentimes follow this craze and buy in, they're not the people who make money. By the time you're hearing about it, money's already been made. You're left holding the bag. You're exit liquidity for somebody else. So that is a naughty, naughty thing on my naughty, naughty list. And hopefully it's not on my list next year. What about you?
To me, the most naughty theme of the year was chasing yield and covered call ETFs. There are so many of these covered call ETFs, and they...
Maybe chasing yields in general.
Well, in general, but like this is a new way to chase yield. And that the way that the SEC allows these companies to say they have an 8% yield or 10% yield or something like that, when in reality, it's not a yield.
Yeah.
You know, we run a covered call strategy, and we hesitate to call the income that comes from the options as yield. It's part of the total return profile. It's a way to mitigate risk. There are positives about it, but so many people have put their money in thinking that this is a safe way to produce income.
Yeah.
And the reality is it's not a safe way to
I think it's because how yield is typically framed as I hold something and then I get money for holding it.
Yeah.
I'm getting dividend income. That's not necessarily the case with covered calls, right? You're getting the premium income, but at the end of the day, you could also not hold that thing.
Yeah.
Because it's called away, right? And I agree. I think across the board, under education or in a way trying to fool people is kind of a big threat out there. Definitely on my naughty list.
On the nice list, what do you have for the nice list? What's the game that you kind of liked and agreed with?
Something that I liked and agreed with is I think towards the end of the year, so maybe the past 3 months or so, people started talking about diversification and market breadth a bit more. And so people who, listen, it's really tough. It is very, very tough when you see all of these, you know, a couple of years ago, space tourism companies, or you see these server rack companies, SMCI, you see all these companies that are just absolutely headed for the moon, or your ASTS, right? Your satellite phone companies and whatnot. It's really hard to stay disciplined.
Yeah.
And so typically we're only talking about the risks after it's all blown up. I feel as though in the past six months, maybe the past 3 or 4 months, we're starting to see a bit of people talking about rotation, talking about some of the dangers. And so if you stay diversified for the entire year in spite of the concentrated theme, you're on my nice list.
Okay. The theme that I liked was good uranium and energy investing. I mean, uranium's done really well this year. We've been long it for a few years, and it really took off big this year.
Yep.
And I think that is staying power. And so while, you know, there's a lot of underappreciation of the CapEx spend in AI that's going to make a lot of the Mag 7 names very... make their business less profitable, less attractive overall, to be honest.
Yep.
I still think there's a lot of infrastructure side of the AI data center business that has staying power. It may slow down a little bit, but in general, demand for especially energy is going to be there. And so I think the uranium trade was my favorite theme that I think has staying power and gold, but mainly the uranium, because it actually has such real-world applications.
Yeah.
It's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers three types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to NordProtect.com/InvestTalk and use the code InvestTalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. NordProtect.com/InvestTalk and use code InvestTalk.
Now let's take a look at the listener call of the year right now.
Hi, my name is Joe from Greenville, South Carolina. I have a question that's a little bit more macro. Just as our currency as a country has gotten into this fiat currency with no real backing, it seems like the Fed and the government, when they don't feel like they can raise taxes, just print the money, which is ultimately devaluing our currency over time. And there doesn't seem to be any indication that they're going to stop doing that. They are likely going to do that more and more into the future. What do you think a good safe haven for that would be in the long term? I'm in my 30s and just, I guess, somewhat worried about a somewhat bigger collapse of the system. Just the value of the dollar in general. Is stocks a good place to be in the event of something like that happening? Is gold and silver a good place to be in the event of something like that happening? Is land a good thing to be in the event of something like that happening? I'm just trying to figure out a plan, I guess, for something like that were to happen, because it seems like our currency is just devalued year after year, and I just don't see any change in that coming. Thanks so much. Listen for your answer on the podcast.
What are your initial thoughts when you hear that caller really dig into, I think, something that's on everyone's mind, right?
Yeah, I think it's a great call because it really echoes the anxiety that a lot of people have, not just about the system, but what it means for them, right? Everybody, Shelby back there behind the camera, probably most people listening, we only paid in dollars.
Yeah.
You know, we all exist in a dollarized economy. And what we've seen is, after a decade of not much inflation, not much loss in pricing power in the dollar, massive change in the past 5 years.
Well, and also an explosion of debt.
And an explosion of debt, right? Coming out of the pandemic,
Which
a quarter of debt, roughly, of all U.S. debt was printed during the pandemic.
Right.
And so those things are definitely related to each other. It creates this level of anxiety about, okay, how do I protect my ability to not just save money for retirement, but ensure that that money that I've saved is actually worth something?
Mm-hmm.
They say that, you know, the most difficult assumption you make about retirement is how much money you have, and that's not necessarily true, right? You shouldn't be saving for this pile of money because you think it's a magic number, because the true uncertainty is what your consumption level will be, and that is in part affected by you, but also in part affected by what the pricing and purchasing power, rather, of that currency is.
Yeah. Yeah, so it makes sense. And the reason why I call this the call of the year is because it really encompasses the debasement trade, right? That's kind of what I'm mostly talking about, is the debasement trade, why gold and silver continue to go up. And gold and silver are correlated with the amount of debt outstanding that we have. And obviously, that's exploding. So gold and silver exploding along with geopolitical concerns as well. And so I do think it's in that sense, it hits home. Now, the one problem I have with it is when he says it's a collapse of the system.
I do.
Okay. I think that's a bit hyperbolic. Mm-hmm. What I call it is just, it's a different environment than we're used to, right? Everybody, and I've been saying this for a while now, is the people, they say the generals fight the last war. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we had COVID, but really the last war for everyone still is OE.
Yeah.
In the financial crisis. Yeah. And so everyone's thinking that, hey, everything's going to collapse. We're going to have this deflationary bust like 08.
Yeah.
And the reality is it could be further from the truth because it's all going the other way. It's inflating away. The inflation risk, excuse me, is the biggest risk, not deflationary risk. And so that's what you're seeing in this market, right? You're already seeing commodities reaccelerate. Why? Because the Fed's easing into 3% inflation rate. The spending within government is only continuing to go higher. And that is the ethos of what is happening in this economy. And that's why you have to have this as your base understanding. And you need to clear your mind of an 08 crisis. I see this on YouTube all the time. There are YouTube channels that are dedicated.
Well, it gets clicks.
It's clicks. It's dedicated to, the housing market's going to collapse again.
Collapse. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The problem is that people don't realize 40% of homes are paid off. Right, there's only a small set of homes that are actually potentially be foreclosed on.
Well, I think it also goes back to how people perceive things that are far away from them. Right,
yeah.
I feel like sometimes I'm the only one that remembers how we were dying during COVID. Right, yeah. New York City had these vans and stuff going through LA. The hospitals are full. In a similar way, I feel like people talk about 08 as if they weren't there. And I remember driving down PCH and every house was for sale. Mm. I don't mean like a couple houses. I mean every single house.
Yeah.
Because nobody could afford their homes anymore. And sure, it was a great time to pick up assets if you had a bunch of money. But like that doesn't happen but once in many generations, yeah. Right? And so you can't, like you said, frame what the next battle, the next war is going to be towards something that is such an outlier of an event, it doesn't help you really cope with the next thing. Now, the other issue I have, call for no little issue that people were saying is nothing backs the dollar. That's not true.
That's not
true. Okay, so the U.S. government's ability to tax its citizens backs the dollar.
And our economy.
And our economy, and the fact that the U.S. has 30 of the world's 33 aircraft carriers in its Navy. So there are a lot of things that do back the dollar.
Right.
And so I feel like that's commonly a position that's taken by people that are love Bitcoin and think of this digital currency as replacing their dollar. And so the likelihood of a replacement of the dollar isn't as likely as just the system changing a bit.
Exactly. Right? And that's where I think it's just evolving, it's changing. But I don't think that the system's going to collapse. Yeah. It's just evolving, it's changing. It's a new environment, post-COVID, it's an inflationary environment, and you have to adjust your strategy accordingly.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, for someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Now let's dig into 2026. A lot could happen next year. There are some base case expectations. So let's talk about two truths and an outlier.
Two truths.
What two things they're kind of expected, do you think, will actually play out next year? And what is the outlier? People are getting completely wrong.
For me, and this is something that has really been a case for a couple times, right, is we're going to continue to have talks about a recession. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think we're going to continue to have historically tight credit spreads, which is something that we've seen over the past 6 months to a year now, where each and every day we're talking about slowing economy. It's not really showing up yet in credit markets. I expect that's probably going to continue next year as well.
I like that. What was your other truth?
Truth is volatility continues to be a bit settled. Liquidity is going to continue to improve, rates falling. And then so you are probably going to see a resurgence of small and mid-cap outperformance, something that we haven't, again, seen in a couple of years. But the conditions are ripe. So I think that's probably a solid prediction of what might happen in 2026.
Okay. And that kind of fits with my couple themes here. Number one is dollar weakness. Dollar was weak pretty much. If you're talking about the whole year, obviously most in the first half of the year, it rallied a little bit in the back half of the year, but overall dollars down pretty significantly this year, especially compared to previous years. And now the Fed's doing QE again.
Yep.
Right. They're easing policy into, you know, high 2%, you know, 3% inflation rate. And so I just don't see anything but a path downward for the dollar, especially if you look at the administration. This administration, if they're wanting to reshore manufacturing, they need to make the dollar more competitive. It needs to be cheaper. And that's something every country tries to do, that tries to improve their economy, lower the value of the currency, make their goods and services cheaper to the rest of the world, and that improves exports. So that is something I think this administration is, in some ways, hell-bent on doing, is getting the dollar down. And then number two is, I do think the AI hype will fade. It's already fading a little bit. You're seeing NVIDIA kind of slow, especially with what's going on with Google and their TPUs. And so I think a lot of that hype will fade. Now, I do think it's going to create a lot of opportunity on the back end, but I think that could be something under pressure as we head into next year. Now, what was your outlier?
I actually have a bunch of outliers.
Yeah. What's your number one?
This is tough.
Hot take. What's this the hot take?
What? My number one hot take is a big blow up in private equity firms.
Oh, okay.
They've extended themselves a lot in private debt markets. Deal flow has dried up a bit. You've seen them start to lock up certain funds. I think there can be a huge blow up in private equity sometime in the next 12 months.
Okay.
The other one is the Fed cuts rates to zero.
Wow.
And you said outliers. Yeah. I mean, absolutely crazy outlier. The new Fed board cuts rates to zero.
Well,
I don't think that's going to happen. I'm saying crazy things. Yeah. Well, I do think prime net be.
I would say that's a non-zero possibility.
Yeah. It's always
this administration has been known to think outside the box, shall we say, right?
Yeah.
Do things that are abnormal. So I think that'll be a challenge with the Fed board. So we'll see. My outlier is a weak dollar will actually be a headwind to U.S. assets. Then the dollar weakness will not be, usually historically, is dollar weakness is good. It's good for the economy. You know, I think it'll be good for the dollar.
Well,
and good for small caps.
If the dollar weakness is demand driven, then certainly it could be bad for U.S. assets because there's just not international capital flow.
That's obsessed.
Yeah, so regardless of, you know, what the dynamic is, if it's less rates driven and more demand driven, I think it's
so. Yeah, because if all of a sudden it's not just 1 year of the dollar down, now it's a durable trend.
Yeah.
Now it's less clear cut to keep your assets in U.S. markets.
Yeah.
And move those assets elsewhere. And so I think money will continue to flow into assets abroad, which means it will be obviously foreign equities.
So then, with that being said, what are the principles that matter? No matter what 2026 brings.
Okay. Number one I have is have a plan. What do you think is going to happen in 2026? And what should your portfolio look like based on that? Now, I'm not saying, you could be bearish on the market and you could stuff like go to cash.
Okay. Yeah.
But maybe you shift your sector allocation, maybe your asset allocation, something, and have a plan and execute it. And kind of continually move towards that plan and update that plan as new information comes along.
Yeah. For me, it's especially if you have the time horizon, if you're a younger investor, it is as much as you can stay invested. And that doesn't mean don't raise cash levels. That's not what I mean when I say stay invested. I mean that, you know, missing the 10 best days in a bull run, you can miss a majority of the returns.
For sure.
And so for somebody who is able, has the risk tolerance, has the time horizon to stay invested in the market for the long term, you have to understand that volatility is the price you pay for compounding returns.
Yeah.
And so just like any other year in 2026, stay as invested as you can.
I like that. I also put down matching your risk, especially in this market where, you know, there's the meme stock craze and there's the hover call ETF craze and money going into, obviously, precious metals, commodities in general, which historically, now they're an uptrend, but they're historically very volatile. So you have to really know that when you're getting into that, you know, you're going to experience that volatility. You know, gold miners have done amazing this year, but a 20% drop in gold miners in a month is not out of the question.
Yeah.
You know, that could be a normal, that's a normal pullback in that space. And so when you're making asset allocation decisions, do it so that you're working towards an end goal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that happens, especially older people, maybe approaching retirement, you have a large nest egg. The question is, do you have enough money? Like, maybe you do, but create a plan, create a cash flow analysis, understand what your needs are. And a lot of times you don't need to take as much risk as you are willing to take, especially when you have that FOMO and everyone else is making money. They double their money in gold or uranium or whatever. And that maybe a good place to allocate some money, but keep your risk tolerance in line with your goals.
I think my second one is, as best you can, control your fees and control your taxes. And so for an investor who is handling this themselves, I mean, we get calls all the time about, hey, I really like this thematic AI fund. I look at it. The 10 names are some of the largest names in the U.S. It only invests in U.S. large caps. It only holds 12 names and charges over 1%.
Yeah.
And then it's something that you can so easily avoid that can benefit you in the long term.
Yes.
On the other side, I control your taxes. You obviously can't control a lot of things about your taxes, but you know you can't control not being invested in funds that have high turnover.
Yeah.
If you're in a mutual fund that has 400% turnover because it's chasing momentum, you're going to be taxed it on capital gains down the road. So those are two things investors can do to help have them have better returns in the long
term. And a piggyback on that is indexing is it right for everybody?
Yeah.
You know, depending on your situation, how easy you want it to be, but also understanding the risk that you have. What's crazy to me is there's a new ETF. It's like, I think it's TOPS, T-O-P-S. It's like top 10 companies in the market. That's it.
She'll launch that.
Top 10. And then people are paying for that, right? You can go and buy top 10. And not only that, you're Uber costs you even more than the indexes, right? So you can use index funds, but just going by the S&P is, I think, no longer a strategy that's going to give you the outsized returns that you're looking for. But let's move on to our rapid fire lightning round.
Question number one, what investing myth needs to die?
Well, fees are important. I think people are too myopic options.
Okay.
Some people just only focus on, like, let's get the lowest fees.
The reason for the fees.
Yeah, you want to have reasonable fees to accomplish what you're looking to do.
Some places are more expensive.
Yeah. What is the most common blind spot for the average investor?
I think is understanding what their goals are. I think a lot of people don't understand their goals.
Mm-hmm.
There are people all the time.
They just want to make money.
They just want to make money. There are people all the time. I've said this to clients. I said, your goal isn't to have $10 billion when you die.
Yeah.
Your goal is to fund your retirement.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to understand yourself, but if you were looking for the most money possible, you would only make very risky bets and you'd be willing to lose it all. Frankly, you'd probably just go to Vegas, put all your net worth on black and see what happens, you know? But yeah, I think that's the biggest blind spot is understanding yourself, understanding what your goals are.
Okay.
What is your sleeper theme for 2026?
Broad commodities.
Okay.
I think this year's been about gold.
Copper? Copper's done well?
Copper's done well. But I think broad commodities.
Ethicals have been lagging.
The debasement trade is going to broaden it out. What is the biggest problem with traditional finance media?
Traditional finance media is the problem with all media. There are ads, and so they try and sell those ads, and so they focus on things that sell ads. And, you know, it went all the way back to Kramer with his money gun, and obviously I know the irony of me saying that because the way you look right now.
And the money gun.
But...
You kind of had your own little...
I did have a money gun idea, but it is generally about selling ads and keeping you focused. Everything is about keeping you focused. There's a lot of people trying to get your attention, so people oftentimes don't really get educated from traditional financial media. Okay. I think that's a big problem. What is the biggest risk investors are underestimating heading into 2026?
I think it's the dollar still. I still think it's the dollar. I think that while people expect general dollar weakness, I think that it's the larger impact of what that can mean for flows into U.S. assets.
Most importantly, U.S. treasuries.
U.S. treasuries. Issuing
a lot of debt.
Exactly. So I think we're at $90 trillion that's coming due next year.
Yep.
Over the past year, 82% of all debt issued has been in treasuries. In T-bills. So that means that can be rolled over again and again.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why the Fed is doing QE again, is because they need to monetize the debt. Value and pitfalls of financial social media. So where do people actually underestimate the value of social media when it comes to finance?
Well, I think the answer is the same, which is exposed to who you're exposed to. So I think one of the big benefits is you get exposed to voices that you might not otherwise hear. There was a woman, I think her name is Kyla Scanlon, a couple years ago, I got exposed to, really smart. She was 25 at the time. She's the one who coined the phrase vibe session. Brilliant. Now she's all over everywhere.
Yep.
But, you know, I got exposed to her when she was in the tens of thousands of followers. At the same time, you also get exposed to people with millions of followers that are trying to scam you.
Yeah.
And so it becomes really hard to discern what is good for your financial health and what is effectively financial cancer.
Yeah.
And social media, frankly, tends to tilt more toward the bad.
Well, I think it's more human psychology tilts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because people on anybody who's getting financial advice from TikTok should just quit. Right? Like, you're not going to get any good advice. And I do think that there are a lot of great, very interesting people that have great expertise that open you up to really new ideas about the broader economy and how the global system works, as well as different sectors, as well as experts on different sectors that have worked in that industry for a long period of time that have perspectives you're not going to get on CNBC. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But most people fall prey to TikTok. A lot of scams out there.
My last question. Which Christmas movie would you survive the least amount of time in?
I don't know. What's yours?
It's Die Hard. If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, I will die on that hill. Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and you would not survive.
If 2025 was a Rufus song, what would it
be? Underwater.
We're up.
Yeah, we're up. We're up.
We're up.
We're up. We're up. We're up. We're up. Yeah, I mean, that's the funnier answer.
That's the funnier answer. Yeah. Mine would be You're Right.
Okay. Fair enough.
Everyone was talking about, you know, Trump, Liberation Day, and everyone kind of whistled past the great girl. He's not going to do much.
Yeah.
He did.
I like Underwater. The new year is obviously a time for making resolutions that you inevitably you will not follow through on. Hopefully, we can follow through on some of ours. So, Justin, what is one resolution you have for investors broadly?
It's to understand that near-term performance has far more to do with flows than fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, fundamentals can lead to flows. But if money is not paying attention to that positive inflection in the asset class or a company or a sector, it's not going to result in good performance. So flows have to fall. And it can happen the other way, right? Where it's popular on FinTwit or it's a meme stock or whatever. And the per meme stocks are a perfect example. Most of those names, their fundamentals of the business are not improving. But the average investor is talking about it and money is flowing into it.
Yep.
And so if you're just chasing near-term performance, really all you're doing is chasing flows for the most part, especially if there's not the underlying improvement in those fundamentals.
Mine is stop checking your portfolio every day. I think one of the things that a guy used to work when he works at State Street now, his name was John Law, great voice, and he also did voice acting.
Charlie.
Just one of the best voices ever. But He would always say, it's a fantastic thing. He would always say the best trade is no trade. And that oftentimes is the case.
Yeah.
People tend to overreact, do things unnecessarily, incur costs, not just in, you know, the difference between when you end up buying back into that name, but turnover, capital gains, tax costs, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So honestly, unplug. You don't have to check each and every day. Your blood pressure will thank you. You'll be happier. Your family will be happier. Just unplug.
Sir.
Okay. What is a resolution you have for yourself? Actually, two. So if you have two, you can say two.
My number one is actually getting better at prompting AI to create value. Because what I've learned, if I've learned anything about AI over the past, I've been kind of digging into it in the last 3-4 months, is that the way you speak to it, the what you say, is so important to what you get. So many people just want it, you know, type a couple sentences, and it's, you think it's going to create some sort of great outcome. And the reality is, it's a great tool,
yeah,
but you have to use it correctly, just like any piece of software. And I want to get better at making sure when I do speak to it, I'm doing it in the right way, and it's actually creating value, and it's creating outcomes that are not hallucinated, right? As well.
Always good. Thing.
Yeah. And that its output is something that is useful.
So I have one that is kind of in that vein. I think that now we're in kind of the golden age of workflow optimization, which sounds so boring, but it can be really helpful.
Yeah.
And so my goal is to cut at least one unnecessary process from my workflow each month, right? That helps you have more face time with our clients, be able to devote more time to our listeners. I can just improve overall. My other one is a personal one because I do this so often. I am so bad at finishing books. And I don't mean, you know, educational books. I mean, sometimes you got to take a step back, move into fiction. I just pick up multiple books and I just get 75% of the way through all of them. And I do it all at the same time. It's really weird. I'm getting a face from Shelby. I deserve that face. I need to finish 4 books. That's a personal thing.
You get distracted by the cats.
Well, no, because I'll hear about a new book and I'll, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's start this one now. And now all of a sudden they're bleeding together and I'm like, well, the plots in my head don't even make sense because I got 4 books going on in here. Anyway, that's my personal.
Stick with one and finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it.
One, finish it. Or maybe two.
Yeah. I think your other New Year's resolution should be less vet bills.
Vet bills, yeah. That's another one as well.
Yeah. He has cats. I have a dog.
I didn't have vet insurance. I do now.
There you go. Well, that about does it for our 2025 holiday special. This is our first time doing this. We want to thank all of you because without you, we would not be here. So this was fun. Hopefully we'll do it every year.
I had a good time.
I'm going to switch up my garb next year, get a little bit more thematic with my Laker gear. I'm a Laker fan. You have the Eagles. I'm jealous.
Hopefully I won't be as sad. I'll be jealous to be an Eagles fan right now.
You won the Super Bowl.
Oh, man. What have you done for me lately?
All right. That's sports.
Yeah, that's sports.
That's sports.
Anyway, we really appreciate all of you guys for joining us, and we're very excited to be with you in the new year.
See you in 2026.